Thanks for tuning in to What It Is on WNCW. I'm Joe Kendrick, very glad to be joined by Carol Rifkin and Sean Williams on the panel, both musicians, talking a little bit today about how to make it in the music world as a musician, either as an amateur or professional. Was talking with an acquaintance of mine recently about his music business and how barter is so prevalent. And it got me thinking, how much of this is trade and how much of this is actually making any money at all?
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid in high school, I was homesick one day and I got to see Mike Mills of REM on Regis and Kathy Lee. And he was playing an acoustic guitar and singing some REM songs. And it was right after Out of Time. And they said, you know, how does it feel to be, you know, in the music industry for 10, 15 years, however long it had been at that point, and just now make it? And Mike said, you know, I felt like when I was able to quit my job and play full time that I felt then that I'd made it, you know. So this is all nice, but, you know, it's really nothing new to me. And I think about the musicians that I see and that I work with all the time that teach, you know, they play out in cover bands, they play out in original bands, you know, they sell guitars, you know, they've actually made it because they're working with what they love. You know, they're doing what they love.
I guess it is about your definition of what making it is. I'm one of those multitaskers. I write about music. I play music. I, you know, just do radio about the music that I love to just be able to stay in what's my passion. But part of it, I guess, is your definition of what a professional musician is. If you get paid or can do a good barter. I think somehow there's a dividing line in what a professional is with your passion for it and whether or not it's to please your friends. There's a whole school of among musicians who play at the local club level who might be more interested in impressing their friends than playing for the audience. There's a whole big fish in a small pond of he's the best because he can play that the fastest, or he's the best because he knows more songs, or he's the best because he has more girlfriends and better equipment, you know, or more chicks like him or something. I don't know. That sounds stupid, but there's some truth in it. You know, there's the cool factor that's kind of before you get to the professional, but the professional part is when you start to say, well, wait a minute, I'm taking money to entertain. And that's when you become a professional, I think, when you cross that line and say it's about giving the people something for their money.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I think for a long time, you know, in my married life, I felt like music had to be a hobby for me. That's the way I could stay true to it. If I didn't actually have to, I could only do, if I only did what I wanted to do, you know, and I wasn't relying on the money or what other people thought of me, you know, as a musician. And now it's kind of come full circle where, you know, I'm selling guitars and I'm playing music, you know, and I'm actually still doing stuff. I feel like I'm being true to myself. So I'm happy with where I am right now, you know, as far as, you know, as a musician.
Oh, that's a very cool way to look at it, because again, you're defining that you're a professional because your passion is there for it.
There tends to be the phenomenon of people that look at musicians on stage, or really look at anything like media, like somebody on TV, or perhaps listen to somebody on the radio and think, they've made it, they've got to have it so good because they're there, and I love this, that they're projecting their own sort of thoughts of grandeur upon those people. But like you were alluding to earlier, Carol, there's that whole cool factor, which is a lot of the reason why people get attracted to being a musician in the first place, or being up on stage. And I think that that cool factor can be a little bit like the cheese in the mousetrap.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. You know, and the more you have, the more you have to keep up, you know. So in a lot of ways, the bigger you get, the more you have to work at it. You know, the more you have to put yourself out there.
Oh, and I think really great professional musicians have a passion to create that gets them through those cycles. You know, when you talk about the cool factor and the cheese and the thing, that's one small cycle. But people in music know that it's a constant up and down of work. You have a great year, you don't have a great year. You have a great spring, then you have a bad, you know, fall, whatever. And it's a continuum being a musician of putting the package together and having the self-esteem. Maybe self-esteem is the key to success in music, that you can believe in yourself enough to survive the ups and downs and continue to create in a positive way something that people want to hear, that you believe in. And I think that's where you go and what leads you to professionalism when you get past the early cool crowd stuff.
Aside from being able to talk about how you make it as a full-time musician, what do you know, both being musicians, about how to just get paid at a show? Because there's so many instances of people that play and wind up not really making anything. Perhaps it's not their fault, but a lot of times there are a number of steps that they could have taken to ensure more people in the audience were there.
Right. Yeah. I have to wear a lot of hats in Archer versus Gumman. I'm the booking manager. I'm the creative, promotional person, you know, and if you're going to play a place with a door charge, you know, you have to get people out. You have to make it known to people that they have to come out for you to continue to be able to do that. One of the worst things to do is promise a club that you're going to bring 200 people and 30 people show up. You do, as an artist, I mean, as a person in the music business, you have to be concerned with promoting and marketing yourself. And that's one of the toughest things for singer-songwriters to do. You get the feeling that you're selling yourself in one way or another, you know, whereas all you wanted to do was just write some songs and play some music for your buddies.
I know this has happened to you. It's happened to me where you get a little angry after the fact that somebody that wasn't some small artist, but some name artist played in your town and you didn't even know about it.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I remember going to see Steve Earle maybe 10 years back at the Handlebar, and maybe 40 people were there, and I was enraged. You know, this is Steve Earle. More recently, I saw Scott Miller at the Handlebar, and again, maybe 50 people were there. And it was like, how did this happen? Greenville, what is going on? You know,
it's a real balancing act. And part of it is, it never used to be that way. I mean, the recession has changed music so much in so many ways. When you're the artist now, you used to just be excited to get a club gig. How many young rock and roll bands have you seen or you've gone to because your nephew's in it or somebody, and they get this gig and they're so excited to play the club, and you go and there's nobody there, and it's like, duh, well, did you tell anyone?
Right.
You know, clubs used to have marketing people and people who sent the listings in. A lot of them don't have it anymore, and it often falls on the artist to do it themselves. And that didn't used to be true. So
yeah.
Now you're playing the gig, you're doing the booking, and you're having to promote yourself too, which is really hard. It's much harder to promote yourself than someone else. So there's a lot of stress involved with doing it too. And I think a level of professionalism becomes required. But even big acts, a lot of marketing and promotion used to go through your record label. Well, people are independent now. Even most of the record labels are smaller. And so even the biggest artists, Steve Earle, whatever, have had to pick up some of the work of promoting the gig and letting people know. And there's a lot of cracks falling through all over in it. It's hard.
All right. And, you know, for new bands, you know, I have so many people ask me how we did this or whatever, you know. And, you know, we were never really content with just putting up the Facebook event invite. You know, you really have to get out and hand out handbills and meet people and be excited about what you're doing, you know, and be proud of what the guys that you have playing, you know, what they're doing. It's very important.
Yeah, and sometimes you can't get it all done. That's the hardest part,
yeah.
Is that you know what I'm talking about, I'm sure, is I just didn't have enough time to get all this done. But the advice that I generally give to good bands with jobs is be clear. Before, it's like applying for a job. When you say you're going to hire them, ask them, you can say it really politely, you can be nice, you say, what are your terms when you work there? Do you collect the door and split it? You know, how do you work your payment? No one is going to get mad at you for asking that. If you don't bother to ask, you're putting yourself in a terrible position. But a lot of new bands don't know to ask. They don't know that maybe they're going to work the door as a split, give you half of it. Maybe they're going to give you all of it. Maybe they're not going to give you any of it. And they have a set fee that they pay bands. And if you don't ask, you're in trouble.
Yeah. And, you know, act right when you're in the club.
Right. Professionalism. Yeah.
The worst thing is coming away and owing them money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Don't destroy their equipment.
And that happens.
It does. Yeah, definitely.
Now, here's another thing. When you go and play out in other cities, you need to be aware of the practice of trading shows.
Oh,
hooking
definitely.
Up with a band from that city and trading shows in your city.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's the easiest way to get into a club. You have to think that the clubs, they must be just overflowing with press packs and emails, you know, from bands all over asking to play their places. So yeah, that's always the best way to get into a club, you know, to get into a new club is to trade shows. Definitely.
Well, as they say in the marketing industry, untold is unsold. They don't know about you. You don't get the gig and you don't sell the record and nothing happens from that. So it's always a fine line of at what point am I not cool anymore when I'm pushing myself. And then there's also the show. You know, you're a musician and professionalism and you get to the show and it's not what you were told it was going to be. And maybe the people didn't come or the promoter misled you about the quality of the sound system or somebody's sick. And that happens, you know, more often than people would realize that there's miscommunication. A lot of times just out of ignorance about what the show is going to be like, what the stage is going to be like, what the sound system is and what they're providing is going to be like, who's running it. And so you have a situation that's really bad, and I tell people this, and they're often surprised to hear it. I feel like if people came to see me, if there's one person there, I'm going
to
try and put on as good a show as if there were 10 people there, because I'm there because I got the gift of getting to be on that stage. And every time I get on the stage, I think, this is the real gift. For every hour I get to be on the stage, there were 30 hours of stuff I didn't want to do, probably. It used to be maybe 10, now it's forever. So that time on stage is the gift you get for getting to do it. And it's particularly good if you get paid.
Yeah. I mean, you almost have to make your money off your hometown audience if you're planning on going out of town, because you never know what you're going to walk into. You know, there's a lot of clubs in the Charlotte area and the Atlanta area that are new clubs, and I hear buzz about them. So I try to book there. And when I show up, it's not always a good night. You know, sometimes it's a bad night. You don't get paid, you know. You don't sell any merch, you know, so you have to have money in the bank so you can pay for the gas and expenses to get up there and get back, you know. What you were saying about, you know, clubs not knowing who you are, you know, I've had a lot of experiences where I would write, you know, I would send up just a one page, you know, this is what we're doing. We'd like to play your place. And, you know, especially in the Nashville market, I couldn't get anybody to write me back until we got a pretty good write-up on our EP by Ollie Marshall and Mountain Express. And then I was able to, you know, actually talk to people. Same with Charlotte. Until we had a write-up in Shuffle Magazine, nobody in Charlotte would really talk to us either. So that's another aspect. That, you know, that's another hat you have to wear if you're going to make money at your business. You know, unless you're just so good that you make so much money that you can pay other people to do your publicity and other stuff. You know, you have to write people. I mean, I wrote Joe and sent Joe a CD, you know, when the band maybe had been together for 2 months, you know, and asked Joe to listen to it. And if you had anything to say about it, you know, please, you know.
Hey, tell us about your band. Be shamelessly self-promoting right now. Here's your chance. Name of the band is?
Archer versus Gunman. But it was a big deal. It meant a lot for me that Joe actually was there and listened to it and had something nice to say about us, you know. So you have to do that. You know, something you have to do is be mindful that people aren't going to listen to you unless you give them a good reason, you know.
Right. And for those of us who have been in the business for a real long time, that's another technology change kind of thing in many ways. If you think about it, it used to be really hard to make a record, you know, and it used to be really expensive.
Definitely.
In the last 5 to 10 years max, anybody can make a record, and everybody has. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a pen and pencil. You can say anything you want about yourself. And promoters are overwhelmed in radio stations with 30 CDs where they used to get one, you know, or records. And it's hard to take the time to listen to all and to know the difference. So what you get when you get a write-up like that is credibility that says, put my CD of the 30 CDs you haven't heard before put my CD in the front because I've been reviewed in this or whatever. And it's kind of sad that we're at that point, but that's part of it, is that technology has allowed so many people to do it themselves, but hasn't given us the time and ability to weed through them all. Joe, how many CDs do you go through here at the radio station looking at them?
I've always got a constant supply of 36 or more on any given day. And that doesn't include all of the digital downloads.
Wow.
To listen to. Yeah.
Yeah. Music is oversaturated right now. I recently started playing with a new band, and they were putting up their Reverbnation account, their folk. We were looking at the people in the folk charts, and I was like, well, let's, because, you're given rankings as to how many people you play. So within a region, you'll be ranked how many times you've been played among your contemporaries. And we looked at the rock charts, and the first page was people that I'd never heard of, that as far as I know, I've never played out in Greenville, but they've got, studio quality, professional quality studio recordings of their material. And they're just thriving on the internet. And I guess they don't play out, I'm not really sure.
Maybe studio bands have come back.
Wow.
Then.
Yeah. Huh.
You would think that that would be the opposite nowadays, because so many artists make any money that they make live.
When I said studio quality, it was most likely done, on a laptop, canned drums and everything else, I'm just speculating because I don't actually know these guys, but yeah, there were a lot of guys in the upstate Reverb Nation that I'd just never seen, never heard of, no idea where they came from.
That's cool though. It's cool in so many ways that people have that opportunity to do it, but then it just gets also complex by the sheer volume and number of people playing and recording right now. But on the flip side of that, I talked to a major artist the other day who said, I haven't done a CD in 2 years. It's the first time in the history of my career I haven't done a CD in 2 years. It takes $10,000 to do a CD. Can we recoup that in this market? Probably not. We would have, in the past. So more new people are making recordings and less established artists are doing more studio. Everybody's looking around going, what's going to happen,
Yeah.
Should I do a cheap one? Should I wait another year? So there's a real dichotomy of up and down. And then there's also the downsizing of all the groups and recording. I remember going to Folk Alliance in Montreal about 5 or 6 years ago, and I went in a restaurant and for dinner, and it was the first time I'd really seen it. There was an artist with a laptop singing and playing to a laptop, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's so strange. But it turns out they were doing that all over Canada. And then I talked to a friend from Russia who said, there aren't any bands in Russia. That's all you do. Your band is your garage band because no one can afford it. And if they can pay one individual. And I thought, gosh, I hope we never get to that. But now I see the act shrinking.
We're there. Yeah.
Yeah, I see everyone playing as a trio or a duo to be able to economically survive. And I hope that bands aren't going to go away. So I hope that live music is not going to go away.
There's a lot of bands right now that are giving their music away for free to incite people to come to their shows where they actually make money, And once they get there, they can sell them a t-shirt or a koozie or whatever. You're not wanting bands to go away, but, now when you go to Smiley's in Greenville, you'll see a bass player with a little loop pedal, and he'll build his song, He'll start out with the drums by smacking the bass, and then he'll start out with a snare by smacking the bit over the pickup, and he'll build this big sound just from one little pedal, and sing over it, play leads over it and everything else, So, yeah, technology has made it, Culture Prophet, one of the biggest bands in Greenville, everything is programmed on his laptop, and he gets up there and he has, he sings, he's got a live drummer, but everything is programmed in already. It's just aesthetics of seeing a live band.
Oh, that's hard for me because I'm such an acoustic music person, but right. Should we jump into the small venue, Joe? Or one of the things that we've also seen is the rise of the small venue. Everything was big before, and now we're seeing small venues, small acts, and intimate settings making a huge comeback.
Yeah, David Bazan's doing a just house party tour. That's the only place he's playing is house parties.
Yeah, I was telling Joe earlier that I was speaking to Jamie LaValle yesterday, and he was talking about the rise of the house concert scene mm-hmm. is now just a huge circuit at which you really people are earning money and doing well, and they're really people enjoy being the hosts. It's a whole other level of social life. There's a new place in Asheville called the Altamont Theater, which is a small, maybe 75 to 100 seat theater. And I started thinking about it. There's no listening room in downtown Asheville anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's, and there's a demand for a place to go. I mean, we still have the Grey Eagle, but that's actually bigger. Mm. There are very few small listening rooms anymore. So maybe that's the next wave of what's going on.
I think it's so. I think it's like what comedians did in the 90s when they started playing. Or they started performing at rock and roll shows. They were actually making more money doing the rock and roll shows, you know, in the rock and roll venues, than they were in the comedy houses, you know.
So now I have to be a stand-up comic, really.
What do you think? Email us what it is at wncw.org. Let us know your thoughts about how to make it as a musician and the changing times that we're in. We'll feature your comments on our Friday edition of the show. For Public Radio, I'm Joe Kendrick, joined by Carol Rifkin and Sean Williams. Until next time.